Welcome to Life, Lemons and the Law, a podcast from Clark Wilmot. Now, this series of the podcast is all about social mobility, which is the link between the circumstances in which you grow up and the outcomes that you can expect in terms of income and career. Why? Well, the issues of social mobility profoundly affect young people across the UK, and Clark Wilmot has partnered with the Social Mobility Foundation to formally support young people and improve social mobility. So on this episode, we have Tabitha Candy and Sam Harkness, both of whom are from Clark Wilmot, and both of whom, as you'll hear, have personal stories about social mobility. They're also both taking steps to improve social mobility in the legal sector. So Tabitha and Sam, can I please get you to introduce yourselves? Maybe Tabitha, you can go first.
So I'm a trainee solicitor at Clark Wilmot in the commercial litigation team. I've been at Clark Wilmot for just over 2 years now and training towards being a qualified solicitor. So I'm currently studying the solicitor qualification exam.
So same question to you, Sam.
Same question to me. Hello. So I'm Sam Harkness. I am a solicitor in the, it's called the Commercial and Private Client Litigation Team. So same team to Tabitha, but in the Taunton office. The Taunton branch is called the Agriculture, Regulatory and Private Client Litigation Team, which is a fair old mouthful. It covers a lot of different bases, clients across all different sectors. Where I fit into that is regulatory. I'm one of the two lawyers at Clark Wilmot who does criminal and regulatory work for private paid clients, businesses, local authorities. That's prosecution and defence. So I get to do police interviews, environment agency interviews, private prosecutions by bodies like the Health and Safety Executive and the RSPCA, and do a little bit of work for local authorities prosecuting sort of rogue landlords type cases as well. So yeah, I started 2019 as a paralegal in this team, qualifying November 2022.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for joining us. So two people relatively early on in your legal careers. Sam, what did you want to do when you were growing up career-wise?
Around primary school age, I just sort of got it into my head that I wanted to be a lawyer one way or the other. And I think part of that is watching TV. You see barristers, you know, the funny wigs, and you look at that and think, wow, that would be pretty cool to do that as a job. We struggled a little bit when I was growing up. We weren't poor per se, but there were times that we had some financial difficulties around the time of primary school. Kids can be quite unforgiving when you're going without certain things, so it wasn't the easiest time. And I remember telling my parents about this and feeling a little bit guilty at the time because you think, oh, hang on, I've got this idea of something which is completely alien to what we do. We don't have anyone in the family who's been involved in law before. And my parents sort of taught me at that point, just the ceiling that you set is the one that you set for yourself rather than what other people do. And in reality, those ceilings exist. And I learned that later on as I started to try and get that experience. But I always wanted that from sort of age 11, 12. And my parents did nothing to dissuade me of it and said, go seek that experience. Go work as hard as you can to get to that objective. And that's how I've ended up here.
Brilliant. We'll come back to those ceilings and those challenges that you faced a little bit later on. But Tabitha, what did you want to be career-wise growing up? How did you envision your life panning out?
My earliest memory of what I wanted to be growing up is to be a nurse. And I think that's because when you're young, you only really relate to the jobs that you see around you every day, also the jobs that your parents do. So I grew up in a single parent family and my mum's been a waitress. And nurses just seemed like interesting. They were caring, they'd look after people. And I thought that was a great aspirational career. As I grew up, I was open-minded, got to the point where I was thinking about what I want to study at university. I saw people going to university and studying topics that they enjoyed and were interested in, but then not necessarily knowing what kind of jobs or careers they'd want to go in afterwards. So I thought, oh, law might be quite a good one because, you know, you can study law and then you become a lawyer. And the opportunity kind of arose when I was in sick form at my school and people were going around promoting this thing called Pathways to Law, which is run by the Sutton Trust charity, which is fantastic. And I know Sam did the same program.
Slightly different program for me. You did Pathways, whereas I did the Sutton Trust Summer School itself rather than the full program. Same organisation running it.
Yeah, no, the Sutton Trust. They came along to an assembly and said, oh, we were offering this. I grew up in Gloucestershire, so the University of Bristol was my local university that was hosting this program. And I thought, oh, that sounds incredible. It was weekly taster sessions at the university and they would help you with your personal statement and what studying law would be like at a Russell Group university, which I would never had considered had I not heard this program. And then also taster sessions into what a career in law would be like. So I got my first ever legal work experience through doing Pathways to Law. and having no connections to legal professionals growing up, that was a really big opportunity for me. Gave me the opportunity to realize that this is something I can do, I can study it, and I can go on to have a career in it. Yeah, it was really having that opportunity with Pathways to Law and the Sutton Trust that made me realize that law is something that I could do.
Rewinding slightly, why would you not have considered the law? Because I think this probably gets to the heart of the lack of social mobility in the UK. Why was it not an option for you?
It was just not something that I'd really considered because I didn't know any lawyers. So it was only when the Sutton Trust came along and said, oh, we can do this program, that I started to consider it. And I was always interested in sociology as well, and kind of equality and like social justice and that kind of thing. So by studying law, it tied really well into those areas that I was interested in. But yeah, it was just, I just never considered law because I didn't have that exposure to it.
You don't have a say in it and you don't have any skin in the game. I feel similarly about it sometimes, and Tabs touched on it there. There's an element sometimes of the profession can be quite closed off in certain places. There was a Law Society Gazette sent around a weekly thing, and one of my opponents actually in one of my cases wrote a letter in where he was basically talking about televised hearings and how it may cheapen the process and may devalue sort of access to justice because it turns it into a bit of a spectacle. I felt quite strongly about that and wrote back in and said, actually, I think that if you're having justice be more open, it allows people to understand it and see bits which otherwise they may not have access to, so they can form that opinion at an earlier stage. And I think the fact that sometimes it's closed off and the push for elite people and for excellent talent is one thing, but some people mistake that sometimes as an ability to gatekeep people out of the profession. That's really challenging. And so I oppose that. And I think, like Tab, I very much enjoy the concept of people like the Sutton Trust and Social Mobility Foundation coming along and saying, look, this is the entry for you, even if you don't have those connections, don't have the way in otherwise, and try and get in that way.
Sam, question for you. You spoke about some challenges, some ceilings that you did face, despite your parents encouraging you to ignore them almost. What were they and when did you first encounter them?
So one of the weird ones that I encountered, I've talked about this at sit form since I went back. One of the weird ones is people not believing that it was an option for me, despite the fact that I wanted to consider it as an option for myself. That never came from my parents. I love them to pieces, and the work that they put in to build me up and say, you go for it and don't set that ceiling is fantastic. There were some teachers, unfortunately, who didn't quite share that view.
Was it gatekeeping in that?
I don't know. I think the environment we were in, I went to school in Highbridge and I loved the school. It set me up for life fantastically. But there is an element sometimes around some people that go to that school because it was a historically low attaining school in a low attaining area and had a reputation locally for not being a fantastic school. Aspiration wasn't necessarily seen as a good thing. People would look at you and go, oh, you're aspiring to a bit too much here. You know, you're looking to go beyond and move away and see different things. And that's not really what we do. And that attitude can be a bit poisonous sometimes. So I'm lucky that there's a few people there who want to challenge that and push their kids to go beyond that. And so having had the opportunity to go back in since, I think it's very important.
Tabitha, you were made aware of the opportunity of a career in law, but you grew up in a family where you didn't consider that as a possibility. Did you find a lack of connections to be a problem at all as your career advanced?
Yeah. So when it came to getting work experience in year 10, I wasn't considering law at this point. I just wanted to do something ultimately that would be something good for the community, something good for the environment. So there is a green electricity company local to where I grew up, and I emailed them to ask if I could do my work experience there. And they emailed back relatively quickly to say, oh no, we're already full on work experience. So I went back to the drawing board. But over that time, my mum happened to bump into someone that worked at that company. She mentioned it to them. She said, oh, my daughter's trying to get work experience at your company, but she's been told she can't. Thankfully, that person that my mum happened to meet said, oh, no, that's fine. She can come in. She can shadow me. So I did end up getting to do my work experience at this company. And when I was there, there were no other work experience students. They don't really do work experience from what I'm told. It was more of a, oh, if you know someone that works here that says, yeah, you can shadow them, then you get it. So that was my first time kind of experiencing it's not what you know, it's who you know and how important that is. And obviously ended up working out for me. But that's an example of, if you don't know anyone, you won't get those opportunities. And you can try and ask and put your hand up and say, I'd like to do this. But unfortunately, people will just turn around and say, oh, we don't know you. You have no connection to us. We're not going to let you do this.
That sort of thing makes me absolutely mad as hell. Don't we? People have those policies. And we're both members in Clark Wilmot of the Equality, Diversity and Inclusivity Committee that we've set up as a firm. And one of the big priorities that we've had and which we've had a lot of involvement on ourselves is the vacation scheme, which is our work experience placement. And there's been a big overhaul in terms of work experience and what we do. Parts of the application process are blind to certain characteristics, so there's no subconscious bias that's attached to it. For example, we've encouraged that we do sort of remote interviews so that students don't have the cost of traveling down to one of our offices to come and do it if they're further away from university. And where ultimately they're being paid, because our work experience placement prior to COVID didn't pay. And that was one of the big priorities that we've changed. So it's just, gatekeeping is a really important word. It's about trying to ensure that actually, if there are obstacles that are in the way, that we're doing a bit to remove those and go, you know what? Connections can be quite difficult for people. It certainly was for me. Certainly was for Tab. But it may be difficult, but actually we're going to judge you based on your merits and who you are as a person and how you respond to this and make this as fair a process as we can along the way.
So what helped you eventually succeed in your ambitions to enter the legal profession, Sam?
Big one's mentoring. So that's something that has been covered on previous podcasts that we've run. When I did the Sutton Trust Summer School, I did a week up in Nottingham. I put that down because my dad said, oh, I'd been there during the RAF. It was a lovely city. It was a great place to go. Loved it. But the scheme attached me a mentor from that week, whose name was Tom Levan. And Tom is now a trainee at Memory Crystal in London. He was fantastic in terms of personal statement and getting me guidance and suggesting these are the sorts of things you want to do. Massive deciding feature for me in terms of trying to get a university in Nottingham. And when I started university, he was in his final year when I was in my first. So we caught up. He gave me a lot of tips in terms of what to do. And I became a summer school ambassador for the next sort of 4 years that I was at university as part of that process. So, you know, having someone like him to be able to pave a bit of a path, if you like, in terms of trying to get that sorted, fantastically helpful. It's something where we've put mentoring as part of our vacation scheme so that any student that comes to us in the sort of 6 months after the scheme gets access to a mentor that they can keep in touch with and have that resource to rely upon. I can't speak highly enough of it, and I certainly can't speak enough highly enough of Tom.
Brilliant, thank you. Tabitha, so what helped you, or what would have helped you if you didn't have that in place?
Very similar to what Sam has just said. So through Pathways to Law, I also got a mentor, and that was really helpful. My mentor was a student at the University of Bristol at the time, so she helped me with my personal statement, just any general questions I had about going to university. Pathways to Law was also really supportive in helping you get work experience and understanding what a career in law was like. And through that, when I then went and started at the University of Bristol, I then mentored as well through Pathways to Law. Yeah, it's really important. And I've continued to mentor through other organizations such as Grow, which is a fantastic charity. It gives you that person that has access to this information and has done it before, so they can kind of guide you, gives you an extra pair of eyes to look through your things. And when I've mentored, I often help people look at their applications. So for things like vacation schemes and training contracts, they're really lengthy applications. So it's really nice to have someone that you can just say, what do you think of this? And they'll advise you, because my family wouldn't have been able to help me with that. So having mentors is really important.
Do you think mentors need to be more readily accessible? Do kids in, say, year 10, a little bit older, do they need to be able to find reference points within the law? Is that something that's missing?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I think that's probably quite a big thing with social mobility, is that if you have parents that work in the professional industries, you'll likely sit down at the dinner table with them, or sit down on weekends, and you'll have these conversations about what's going on in the world. They'll hopefully talk about their job. You'll have that insight from a very young age as to what it is to be a professional. Whereas if you don't have parents in that world, you don't have those connections, you'll never have those conversations. So when it comes to interviewing for jobs and they ask you for commercial awareness on this recent news story, if you haven't grown up discussing those kind of things over the dinner table, you won't be used to discussing that when it comes to interview, whereas there will be people that have grown up with that, and they'll very happily discuss what political news stories are going on. So that's a massive thing that's overlooked in terms of social mobility, that people miss out on those conversations and certain ways of speaking about things.
I've realised I've sounded like a bumpkin in some of my interviews when people have started talking about commercial awareness questions, and you go, hang on a minute. I've sort of reflected on it afterwards when I've not got something and thought, I sounded probably quite unrefined and like I was guessing at this, and I was. But I think your point in terms of early access ed to mentors is right as well, because in the formative years, those sort of times where you're looking at work experience, you can rule out opportunities sometimes. That irks me in terms of wasted potential, because there are schools out there which historically might be low attaining, but actually if people had the access at an earlier stage, which might inform their decision-making, you go, I can see this, or I can see myself here, then that gives you another element of motivation again to be able to use that.
And I think it's important as well to have a mentor that you can relate to, that reflects yourself. So there have been times where I've had mentors who I have not related to in any kind of sense. So they haven't had the same upbringing as me, and you find it really difficult to relate to them. And I didn't find that mentoring scheme that helpful at the time. Whereas if your mentor is someone who's similar to you, it's a lot easier to then look up to them and see, oh, well, this person's done it. This person hasn't had the most straightforward way of getting into this career. So that means I can also do that, because you have a real life example of someone that has done that in front of you.
Okay, question for both of you. What motivated you to join the Diversity and Inclusion Committee? And what are your objectives as a committee?
What motivated me was my prior experience, partly. So having done 4 years of the ambassador work when I was at university, and I remember speaking to a senior associate in our team who had joined it in its sort of its infancy. And I said to her about my range of experience, and this is what I'd like to do. And there was talk about it being involved with, you know, work experience. So that motivated me in terms of, could I make a bit more of a tangible difference to something I feel quite strongly about? And so that was a big motivating feature. In terms of what we aim to do, is actually provide a bit more of an environment, I think, at the firm through our actions and through suggesting that the firm takes certain directions that actively improves our EDI credentials in terms of it. We want to be more transparent of our data. We want to do work towards gender pay gap. We want to do work in terms of, you know, we've recognised that, you know, for instance, race and ethnicity and presence at Clark Wilmot is a factor that we need to improve on. And so it's about how we can do something that's meaningful to engage with that, rather than doing something that might otherwise be potentially tokenistic. It's about having people from different perspectives sit down and go, okay, what do we think might actually help here?
And just to answer your question earlier, Ed, on what motivated me to join the EDI committee, when I first joined Clark Wilmot, I got an email from Sam to say, hi, welcome to the team, because we're broadly in the same team. And so then Sam and I got chatting, and we realized that we'd both done programs at the Sutton Trust. So then Sam was already part of the EDI committee. So he said, if this is something you're interested in, you should join. So I ended up joining because of Sam. I think we realized, because we'd both done the Sutton Trust programs and we're both so passionate about it, it's something that once you've done something like that, once you've had support from a social mobility charity, you want to give back, because you realize how important these schemes are, and how I simply would not be where I am today had I not done Pathways to Law. I would have never considered a career in law. So it's so important. And I think Sam and I both appreciate that. So by being part of the EDI committee, it's our way of trying to give back and make sure that other people like us get the same opportunities we do.
Okay, so thinking about wrapping up, obviously we're talking about social mobility, how it needs to be addressed, because it's a broad issue, especially in the UK, far broader than the legal sector. What needs to change for social mobility to be less of an issue? We touched on earlier an easier access to mentors. Is there anything else that you think needs to be in place?
I mean, as I said to you before, it's the openness and open doors that's the big one. And so whether that comes in the form of mentoring, whether that comes in the form of a bit of corporate responsibility, I think that's a massive one. You know, you can only rely so much on people putting themselves forward to try and give back a bit if they've benefited from these schemes. And I think that it's great that, for instance, here we're in an environment where Tab and I have been able to embrace that and be part of that. That may not always be the case. I remember I went to interview at a law firm in Bristol for a training contract role. And they suggested that we do a presentation as part of it. And that was supposed to be on a, quote, topic that you're passionate about, unquote. So I picked the Sutton Trust, which I was obviously very passionate about. I'd spent a lot of time involved with it. And the presentation finished, and the sort of the two partners that I was doing the presentation to sat there and went, it's very interesting. It's just not really the sort of thing that we value as a firm. And I thought, well, I don't really now care if I don't get this vacancy, to be honest. That environment can be quite toxic. And I think firms are growing up and recognizing that it has massive benefits and that they have a role to play in it. Corporate responsibility is important. Transparency is important. Mentorship is important. I think visibility at a younger age, as you've identified, Ed, and trying to get people into schools to be able to say this is what we can do is important. And if you can combat it from all those sorts of different approaches, then it will change. Perception is always going to be a difficult one. There was an experience I had when I was at university where I was on one of the law societies at Nottingham, the law society. I was on its committee. And I was in there one day with our welfare representative for the law society and another person who I shall not name. She was on one of the committees. And we were talking about the fact I was going to be doing Sutton Trust Summer School and working as an ambassador. And she went, oh, that's great. Well, maybe, you know, on society, you've got our welfare representative, and pointed to him and said, maybe you could be our poor kids representative. And I was just like, that perception is damaging. And I'm sure that came out of a position of naivety, and I'm sure she's doing very well for herself elsewhere. But that sort of perception is an issue, and perceiving it as going, actually, these things are valid initiatives that you can be involved in. They do fantastic work for a number of different people from all sorts of different backgrounds. And putting some respect on it and saying that, you know, we value those different experiences and where they've come from goes a long way.
That really brings me on, because I was also going to mention perception, Sam, and how that's really important. I think that's a massive barrier, because see, people like myself and Sam appreciate how important social mobility is because we've benefited from it. It's got us where we are today. Whereas there are a lot of people that have never heard of social mobility, don't know what it is, don't really appreciate what it is. And so I think having these conversations and being open really helps. I think it's a bit of a cultural shift. I didn't really realize that I was coming from maybe more of a disadvantaged background to my peers at university until when I first started, and people that I would meet for the first time would say, what school did you go to? And I'm thinking, why are you asking me that? I went to a random state school in rural Gloucestershire. You'd never have heard of it. Unless maybe they recognize me, maybe they think that I'm someone that they know. But no, they're purely asking because they want to size up if I went to a grand private school and if it's better than their school or if we might have those connections and stuff. And when I realized that, I thought that was absolutely nuts. That's a big thing. Like I never really felt that isolated until I came to university and I realized that there is a big divide between being privately school educated and state school educated and what difference that makes in your upbringing and your opportunities. So I think kind of understanding that and being state school proud and having those discussions and talking about it and making sure that people who ask those questions are aware of the weight of that question, because to them, they probably thought it was a perfectly normal question to ask. It's the kind of things that their friends would ask them. They've probably been asked it as well themselves. So it's just an icebreaker for them. Whereas for me, that had far more weight to it. Yeah, it's about breaking down those barriers and making sure people understand what these things mean and how we can be more open and transparent about social mobility.
Brilliant. Thank you, both of you. To wrap up the podcast, can I ask you what your advice would be to your younger selves? And I guess by extension, to the kind of young professionals that the Social Mobility Foundation and Clark Wilmot are looking to support in this area.
My advice to my younger self would be that the journey isn't a straight road. There will be bumps and obstacles in the way, but that's what makes you a stronger person. That is what makes you resilient. So respect the journey and enjoy it and appreciate that it won't be straightforward and it won't be easy, but that's how you reach the end goal and become the person that you are.
Brilliant. Thank you. Same question to you, Sam.
I mean, this might sound really, like really stupid advice, but I would say one of the bits of advice I give to my younger self is, you know, just because you have a Somerset accent does not mean you have to completely get rid of it. Be realistic. I think that's the advice I would give myself, because sometimes the advice that you get given at universities, etc., doesn't cover all options. That can sometimes lead you to feel a bit lost if things don't go entirely to plan. Have perspective, because one of the things that I realized when I was being rejected from firms was that actually I didn't have a lot of experience that I needed to necessarily be the best version of myself at that point. So perspective is crucial. And the other bit of advice I would say, which is important, is keep going.
Sam, Tabitha, thank you very much indeed.
Great. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed to Tabitha and to Sam, and thank you to you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to find out more about the Social Mobility Foundation and Clark Wilmot and their work in this area, you'll find all the relevant links in the show notes. Please do like and subscribe. I think that's what they say. Thank you very much for listening, and see you next time.